Welcome to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. I'm your host, John Tanza, on this live broadcast from Washington. Here are some of the top stories making news across Sudan and South Sudan this Monday, March 18, 2024. Some frontline workers in South Sudan say they will continue to offer services despite excessive heat waves in Juba town.
The heat is really very, very hot, and we just try our best, because normally when you are already used to work, you can do, because without that, you cannot survive. So we survive through the border.
And a non-profit in South Sudan is helping women learn computer skills.
Under the training, we normally cover almost 7 syllabus or 7 steps in ICTs, where basic computer, we learn it while processing, PowerPoint, and all those, the basic skills that we normally acquire in it.
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. South Sudan's economic challenges have not deterred frontline workers from continuing to offer services despite recent health ministry warning measures urging people to avoid exposure to the heat in Juba. For VOA News, Dennis Longonyi reports from Juba.
Boda riders in Juba say they are not giving up on their work because of the excessive heat. South Sudan's Ministries of Health and Environment issued advisories last week to stay home and avoid exposure to temperatures hitting 45 degrees. Soro Ben, a boda rider in Melekia residential area, says the heat makes his work difficult and he is working in shifts to protect himself.
The heat is really very, very hot, and we just try our best, because normally when you are already used to work, you can do, because without that, you cannot survive. So we survive through the border. So we just try our best. If the sun heat is also very hot, at times we just go and rest, because it's not easy really to work on this heat without helmet. When you look at the sun heat right now, it's also very hot. So this time around, helmets even cannot help, because the sun heat is really very hot.
Tom Jackson, a university student who also operates a border in Monuki residential area, says he fears working at night because of crime, yet he is worried about the heat.
We are facing a lot of challenges actually nowadays. In the current situation, we are really struggling hard, at least to get something in the end of the day, because, you know, we have a lot of responsibilities. So if you did not come and hustle, then it is hard.
Rose Mesika is a traffic police officer in Gudele. She says traffic officers work from morning until midday to avoid the worst heat. She says the heat in Juba has forced the police to reduce working hours for officers.
The work that we are doing is difficult. We want the government to see our work. We are standing under the sun from morning to 12 p.m. in a day for someone to buy drinking water from the shop, especially the big bottle, will cost 1,000 SSP. In case you keep standing under the sun and you manage to get 5,000 SSP, the money will finish on water. So we are tired and we need our situation to be addressed, especially for us in the traffic.
Emmanuel Dumont is a beverage wholesaler. He says the heat has reduced the number of customers because his refrigerators are not cooling drinks enough. He is worried that some of the goods in his shop could be affected by excessive heat.
There's too much heat whereby when you stock things inside, can let me say in the morning, if you stock in the, if it reaches the evening hours at the process, like if you bring them outside, others, they might be shocked, of which in the long run, this thing can expire. Though the expiry date is indicated there, but because of the sunshine, it will not take long. This thing can get spoiled. There's the biggest challenge whereby when it is shining, there's a fan inside, but still there is heat. The hotness still remains. With such situations, we see there, no customers will come.
Ice cream sellers are making good profits. Chol Chol Ball manages an ice cream company in Nyakron West Residential. He says his 90 employees who sell ice cream on bicycles in Juba suburbs report the heat wave has boosted sales.
Also, family, we can support them with this money. So we used to go to market, even though weather is very hot or not hot, we can go.
Last week, the Ministry of Environment and Forestry say the heat in Juba will last for 2 weeks with temperatures between 41 to 45 degrees Celsius. The Ministry of Health said the country has registered cases of death due to the excessive heat, and that disease surveillance department has put a system in place to detect and respond to illnesses related to exposure to heat. For VOA News, I'm Dennis Logonyi reporting from Juba.
Still in Juba, as technological advances become an integral part of life in South Sudan, the fields of science and technology are almost exclusively taken by men. During a recent National Communication Authority conference in Juba, some South Sudanese young women started a project called Banat Initiative for Digital and Leadership Development, which is aimed at mentoring and educating women to help break the computer illiteracy rate in South Sudan. For VOA News, Viola Elias has this report from Juba.
20-year-old Lillian Hassan is a South Sudanese student and a beneficiary of the Banat Initiative for Digital and Leadership Development. She says the communication and technology sector in South Sudan is an industry dominated by men. Hassan says after completing her studies, she and other female graduates like her joined the Banat Initiative to learn basic computer skills.
And under the training, we normally cover almost 7 syllabus or 7 steps in ICTs, where basic computer, we learn it, word processing, PowerPoint, and all those the basic skills that we normally acquire in it. And also, Banat Initiative is helping to empower young girls with the knowledge in ICT. And not only that, and also trying to bring the bridge, like, you know, currently girls in ICT is still down, so they need to bring the two genders to be equal, not only men to do each and everything, but also girls can make it. Banat is also helping girls through the careers, because some of us, once we are done with S4, we don't know what to do.
19-year-old Nyayat Lual, another beneficiary of the initiative, says the program offers mentorship on leadership, psychosocial support, issues related to child marriage, and general career advice.
Girls are going to gain confidence to stand for themselves and also stand in public. It's really going to be a great impact to girls who have attended it. They are really going to be strong. Mentally, there is a mentorship week where experts are brought to guide girls on how to move through difficult ways, like difficult tasks that we are going through. There are early marriages that are happening, but through Bill, when you join the program, really you get inspired. You see experts that are standing up for themselves, and they're also standing up for the country.
Hassan says after each group completes their 6 weeks program, the young women are given laptops to help them practice the skills they acquired during training so they can work in offices or other outside employment.
They provide you with the laptop, of which it will help you in doing your assignment. Not only you taking it outside to people to do it and you pay them, instead of you being paying them, you make it for yourself.
The Banat Initiative has trained more than 80 young women since 2022. The Initiative for Digital and Leadership Development mentors and empower women and girls with ICT skills and narrow the ICT gaps between the men and women. Nancy Idris, a member of the Risk Takers program, says the program also provides mentorship to girls, adding that some girls need guidance to build a successful career. Idris urges parents to allow their girls to attend mentorship programs to enable them to make good career decisions.
For example, the pupils who are coming out of primary 8, all of them want to be doctors. But reaching a certain level, they will discover that, no, I need to go to a different field because this is what suits me more. Yeah, so my message to parents is let your children choose their career path wisely. Allow them to figure out where exactly they fit.
84% of girls over the age of 15 in South Sudan are illiterate. Only 80% of teenage girls are enrolled in secondary schools. The United States Agency for International Development, or USAID, has donated funds to support access to quality education for all students with a particular focus on girls' education in South Sudan. Since 2002, USAID has supported millions of South Sudanese learn foundational literacy and numeracy skills and gain employment. For VOA News, I am Viola Elias reporting from Juba.
There have been major disruptions to internet services across Africa, resulting in severe damage to economies in an era when many companies and individuals rely on connectivity to do business. Tech experts tell VOA the outages began last Thursday when undersea cables were damaged. Darren Taylor has more from Johannesburg.
Countries affected so far by internet breakdowns include South Africa, Nigeria, Ivory Coast, Liberia, Benin, Ghana, and Burkina Faso. In some regions, the internet's been down for days. In others, this service is slow. The chief executive officer of Johannesburg tech firm Worldwide Works, Arthur Goldstuck, says about 99% of the world's internet traffic travels via undersea cables that run between continents.
The African continent obviously is heavily dependent on subsea cables for international access. A lot of companies that are located within the continent still also rely on people accessing them via those undersea cables, because the big servers, the big hubs of all the content where people essentially gather their content together and then distribute it is typically in North America or Western Europe. So when those cables go down, even local sites suffer.
Goldstuck tells VOA a multitude of cables now encircle Africa.
Since around 2009, one cable after the other has connected us. And you would think that we would then be safe from any outages. The problem is a lot of these cables run along the same routes on the seabed. And the seabed is, like on land, the mountain ranges at the bottom of the sea. And it seems like there was some kind of earthquake on the seabed that in the same spot cut four cables at the same time. And suddenly our internet went down.
Jan Vermeulens, also a tech expert and editor of South Africa's My Broadband magazine. He thinks there was a different cause off the coast of Ivory Coast. Vermeulens says many fishing trawlers operate in the shallow waters there, and he suspects one of the vessels severed several fiber optic cables. He says the outages especially affect users of Microsoft, the world's leading computer software company.
It's not the first time Microsoft's had an outage, but it's certainly the first one that I can remember at this scale, impacting literally everything for this amount of time, and that is going to require this amount of time to fix. It's a very long time for people to not be able to access their Microsoft hosted emails, not to be able to access Teams, which many organizations in South Africa have come to rely on for remote working, for meetings and that sort of thing.
Vermeulens says the Microsoft outage is particularly damaging to Africa's larger economies.
South Africa is deeply entrenched in Microsoft's ecosystem. I always joke that we kind of planet Microsoft down here, and that dates back to the 1980s. I grew up on MS-DOS, corporate South Africa adopted DOS and later Windows, and South African government is reliant on these applications. Most of corporate South Africa and most of government could not work.
The internet's back up and running in South Africa, but it's currently slower than it usually is. Microsoft said its network in Africa is steadily improving and should be normal within days. The company said its teams are working actively to increase capacity in the region. Vermeulens says the lesson to be learned is that internet service providers should always have extra cables on standby, ready for activation should others be inoperable. For VOA News, I'm Darren Taylor in Johannesburg.
South Sudanese nationals Peter Bier Ajak and Abraham Cholkech, who were arrested 2 weeks ago in Arizona for attempting to smuggle arms and ammunition worth $4 million to South Sudan, were denied bail last week. A prosecutor at the District Court of Arizona argued that one of the defendants, Peter Bier Ajak, should not be granted bail because he has lots of money in his accounts and is connected to influential people. Peter and Abraham could remain in jail until their second appearance in court, scheduled for May 14, 2024. Sudan's assistant commander-in-chief of the army, Yasir al-Attar, said the chairman of the Sovereign Council, General Abdel Fattah al-Burhan, will head the transitional government after the end of the conflict. Al-Hurra quotes al-Attar as saying the army will not hand over power to civilians except through elections. The Freedom and Change Alliance umbrella group in Sudan says they consider the statement as, quote, a confirmation of the army's undeclared intentions to monopolize power, end of quote. You're listening to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Coming up, Moscow has accused the West of using Ukraine to fight a proxy war against Russia. Find out why after the break.
Hello, listener of South Sudan in Focus. We have an exciting new segment dubbed Words of Wisdom. We want to hear your thoughtful proverbs that echo through your community. This is another chance for you to share wisdom from your roots. All you need to do is record a proverb in a language of your choice, tell us its English translation and what it means. Keep it brief, authentic, and represent your community. Your recorded proverb shall be sampled on South Sudan in Focus every Wednesday. Send your recording via our WhatsApp number, +1 202 630 8011. That is +1 202 630 8011.
You are listening to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. For as long as the U.S. and its Western allies have been sending military assistance to Ukraine, Moscow has accused the West of using Ukraine to fight a proxy war against Russia. But as Maxim Adams reports, the reality is much more complicated.
As the fighting in Ukraine enters its third year, some Western allies are contemplating the possibility of becoming more deeply involved in its conflict with Russia. In late February, French President Emmanuel Macron refused to rule out deploying NATO troops to Ukraine. Former U.S. Defense Intelligence Officer Matt Shoemaker says it was Macron's attempt to push back against Putin.
He certainly wanted to send the message to the Russians that and put them on the back foot, if you will, to put them on the defensive that NATO might actually get involved. But unfortunately, since President Macron did not give an indication to his fellow NATO members that he was going to say this, it certainly put them on the back foot as well.
But another analyst, Sean Steinberg from the Sufan Center, says some NATO boots are already on the ground.
Well, it is true that there are, it seems that there are, NATO advisors, or at least NATO member states have advisors and, you know, special forces on the ground in Ukraine. But I do think there is a huge, massive red line separating advisors on the ground versus U.S. and NATO troops fighting directly against Russian troops.
Retired Vice Admiral Robert Muret, the deputy director of the Syracuse University Institute for Security Policy and Law, says U.S. troops can be found worldwide, but that doesn't mean they are fighting.
That every embassy that the United States has around the world, every last one of them, have a Marine security guard detachment. So we have Marines that do protection. So in small numbers, yes, there are active duty military personnel in Ukraine.
Ruslan Bortnik, the director of the Ukrainian Institute of Politics, says NATO deployment is inevitable.
Russia is a lot bigger than Ukraine, so there will either be a threat of Ukraine losing the war, or foreign troops will need to be sent to the country.
Bortnik believes that as an entity, NATO is unlikely to send troops to fight in Ukraine. But he says that individual member states like France, Poland, the Netherlands, Sweden, Norway, Denmark, or one of the Baltic states could choose to do so. Maxim Adams, VOA News, Washington.
U.S. legislators reacted to a series of controversial remarks made by Republican presidential candidate Donald Trump on Saturday. And while Democratic President Joe Biden wasn't on the campaign trail over the weekend, his re-election bid also made headlines. For VOA's Veronica Baldras Iglesias explains.
Former Republican President Donald Trump made headlines for several remarks he made while campaigning on Saturday in Dayton, Ohio. One of them came as he was criticizing China's building of car manufacturing plants in Mexico.
We're going to put a 100% tariff on every single car that comes across the line, and you're not going to be able to sell those cars. If I get elected, now if I don't get elected, it's going to be a bloodbath for the whole... That's going to be the least of it. It's going to be a bloodbath for the country.
Trump's campaign underscored that the comment wasn't about political violence. Republican Senator Bill Cassidy shared his opinion on the matter during an appearance on NBC's Meet the Press.
The general tone of the speech is why many Americans continue to wonder, should President Trump be president? Depending upon the perspective, somebody is going to interpret it. He's running against Biden, so Biden's going to say it's about political violence. His defenders want to defend him, and so they're going to say it's about economic disaster.
Ohio Republican Representative Mike Turner, who appeared on ABC's This Week, shared his views about Trump's comments, referring to some migrants as not people, and Biden's handling of illegal crossings at the border.
Well, I, of course, disagree with those in the past. I think the American public disagree with those. But I do think that people see that Donald Trump is the only candidate in this race that's going to be able to fix this crisis.
During Saturday's campaign event, Trump also doubled down on criticism of Democratic President Joe Biden's economic policies, and didn't leave out the sense of urgency when calling on Trump supporters to participate in the general election.
I don't think you're going to have another election in this country. If we don't win this election, I don't think you're going to have another election, or certainly not an election that's meaningful. And we better get out, or we better. I actually say that the date, remember this, November 5th, I believe it's going to be the most important date in the history of our country.
President Biden's re-election bid also drew media attention over the weekend with news that his campaign reached a fundraising milestone. It now has $155 million in cash on hand. Of that, $53 million was raised in February alone. The news broke as Biden prepared to host a brunch for several Roman Catholic leaders Sunday at the White House to celebrate St. Patrick's Day. Veronica Valderas Iglesias, VOA News, Washington.
Hello, listener of South Sudan in Focus. We have an exciting new segment dubbed Words of Wisdom. We want to hear your thoughtful proverbs that echo through your community. This is another chance for you to share wisdom from your roots. All you need to do is record a proverb in a language of your choice, tell us its English translation and what it means. Keep it brief, authentic, and represent your community. Your recorded proverb shall be sampled on South Sudan in Focus every Wednesday. Send your recording via our WhatsApp number, +1 202 630 8011. That is +1 202 630 8011. What do you think? People speak out on important questions. The question today:
what do you do to conserve your energy when it is very hot outside?
I drink lots of cold water because it relaxes me. So immediately I become dehydrated or I feel hot, I take in more cold water, yes, and it makes me okay.
Well, I live around the beach, so on a hot day, I just take a stroll on the shore wearing a light cloth so that I can feel the sea breeze around myself.
If it is hot, you have to make sure that you get somewhere where it is cool. You go and bathe. Those are normal things you have to do.
When I'm at my home, I undress. It is my home. I have a bedroom. My home is big. Why won't I undress?
What do you think? A daily discussion of important questions from VOA.
And that's all we prepared for you this Monday, March 18, 2024. We now leave you with the song Riziki by Jamnazi Africa. You've been listening to Jamnazi Africa and their song Riziki. I'm your host John Tanza on this live broadcast from Studio 14 here in Washington. On behalf of our producer Kwame Ofori and engineer Chang, we wish you a lovely evening. Remember to join us again tomorrow for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Tafuta usiku biashara nyingi mwafanya usiku chai kwa mkate sasa mwauza usiku mahindi choma sasa mwauza usiku mali mali sasa mwauza usiku hata maombi nyingi mwafanya usiku koinange munatafuta usiku.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
Sadly, South Sudan's leaders have yet to fulfill their commitments to the South Sudanese people, said Ambassador Robert Wood, alternative representative for special political affairs at the United Nations. He urged the transitional government to implement the necessary preparations for elections regarding the constitution-making process, the type and number of elections, voter registration, the inclusion of displaced people, an election security plan, an election dispute resolution mechanism, and an election timeline. In light of the failure of South Sudanese leaders to demonstrate the political will required to hold free and fair elections, the United States, said Ambassador Wood, reiterates its position that allocating further financial resources for election preparations, absent urgent action by the transitional government, sends the wrong message.
Assessed contributions should not be supporting an electoral process that, without urgent action by the transitional government, will not be free, fair, or credible. Future funding must be accompanied by a renewed push on the South Sudan peace process and improved humanitarian access.
For an electoral process to be credible, we must see the government devoting its own resources to support the electoral institutions it has established, said Ambassador Wood. Open civic and democratic space is essential to a peaceful and credible electoral process. Insecurity in South Sudan continues to be a significant concern for the United States, as intercommunal violence poses the greatest threat to prospects for conducting credible elections, warned Ambassador Wood.
We are alarmed by recent intercommunal violence in Warup State and Abyei, which resulted in the reported killing of 80 civilians and two UNICEF peacekeepers. We call on the South Sudanese government to immediately investigate the death of the two peacekeepers and hold those responsible accountable.
The humanitarian situation also remains a concern, said Ambassador Wood.
We call on the international community to bolster the efforts of the United Nations and humanitarian organizations to help bridge humanitarian financing and resource gaps. Additionally, we implore authorities at both national and subnational tiers to undertake all necessary measures to facilitate unhindered humanitarian access and safeguard the well-being of aid personnel engaged in delivery operations.
Now is the time for the government of South Sudan to demonstrate its commitment to free and fair and credible elections, ensure those responsible for violence are held accountable, and facilitate the delivery of humanitarian assistance.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.